Welcome to Kuvera's Weekly Digest on the most critical developments related to business, finance, and the markets. Mergers are like marriages. They are the bringing together of two individuals, American author Simon Sinek once said. If you wouldn't marry someone for the operational efficiencies they offer in the running of a household, then why would you combine two companies with unique cultures and identities for that reason? The Tata Group will soon have to grapple with this question as it looks to merge two of the four airlines it currently operates, Vistara and Air India. While both these are full-service carriers, the other two, Air India Express and Air Asia India, are budget carriers. Singapore International Airlines, which co-owns Vistara with the Tatas, said this week the two sides were in talks that could lead to a potential integration of the two full-service carriers. In plain speak, this could translate into Air India, which is fully owned by the Tatas, cannibalizing Vistara, which is 51% owned by the conglomerate. While nothing is official yet, a recent news report said that Air India and Vistara would be held under a new JV, in which Singapore Airlines may hold up to 25% with an investment of 5,000 to 10,000 crore rupees. An internal exercise has arrived at a combined valuation of at least 30,000 crore rupees for the airline combo, the report said. We do not know if such a merger will eventually happen. But if it does, it could pave the way for a similar merger of Air India Express and Air Asia India. And if that happens, India's skies could look very different from how they do today. But hey, we are only speculating, so don't take our word for it, yet. We'll keep a hawk's eye on whatever happens and when we know, you'll know. This is not all that the Tata Group made news for this week. News reports say Tata Steel, India's biggest private sector steelmaker, could be looking to exit the UK in the absence of government support. Tata Sons, the group's parent company, is mulling Tata Steel's exit from the UK business, the Economic Times reported, with little hope of getting a £1.5 billion decarbonisation subsidy package from the local government for the proposed transition to green energy. We'll spare you these boring technicalities, but here's what you need to know. Tata Steel owns the largest steelworks in the UK, at Port Talbot in South Wales, and employs as many as 8,000 people in the country. If the company were to exit its UK business, a few thousand people could be at the risk of losing their jobs. And this certainly won't be good news for the UK, which is already battling a big financial crisis. India's central bank has been firefighting inflation for a while now, and, in line with its peers like the US Federal Reserve, the Bank of England and the European Central Bank, has been raising lending rates ever since the Ukraine war began and inflation began to bite almost every major economy. Since May, the RBI has raised lending rates by 190 basis points. But so far, that seems to have helped little. In September, India's consumer inflation rate spiked to a 5-month high of 7.41% from 7.00% the month before. For the 9th month on the trot, inflation breached the RBI's target of keeping the number in the 2-6% band, by a mile. This has forced the government to step in. A group of bureaucrats are set to meet next week to figure out a way of reining in the cost of food and other essential commodities that are burning a hole in the common man's pocket. The government could further restrict food exports, go after hoarders and release buffer stock to bring prices down. As a double whammy of sorts, India's industrial production has taken a tumble. Industrial production in August fell 0.8% as manufacturing and mining output declined. This is the lowest level since a contraction of 3.2% in February 2021 and comes after July's 2.2% growth. All of this is happening even as the news on the macroeconomic front keeps getting gloomier and gloomier. The International Monetary Fund cut India's 2022 economic growth forecast to 6.8%, down from its January estimate of 8.2% and the July projection of 7.4%. The revision followed a similar downgrade by the World Bank, which said it now expected the Indian economy to grow by 6.5% this fiscal year. The RBI though seems to be the most optimistic of the lot, saying it thinks India's gross domestic product will grow by 7% in 2022-23. Whatever be the data, the Indian consumers seem unfazed. India's festival spending has been booming despite such gloomy numbers, with online and offline sales during the September to November period likely to cross $27 billion this year, Reuters reported, citing industry estimates. The number is 25% higher than that of last year and nearly twice as much as the figure in the same period in 2019, before the COVID-19 pandemic hit the economy. As they get ready to celebrate Diwali and then Christmas and the New Year, Indian customers seem to be buying everything from houses to cars to white goods to travel packages to jewelry to, well, everything. While more than $15 billion worth of these products are likely to be bought offline, online marketplaces like Amazon and Flipkart are estimated to sell goods in excess of $11 billion. Little wonder, then, that auto sales hit another peak in September with more than 3.55 lakh passenger vehicles being sold, almost twice the number a year earlier. This breaks the previous high of 3.42 lakh vehicles sold in July. Experts say this upsurge is owing to 2 years of pandemic fatigue, which has left consumers yearning for some fun. So, let's pop some bubbly, shall we? The Indian markets may have been volatile in recent weeks, but mutual fund investors remained largely unaffected in September as inflows via systematic investment plans rose 2% month-on-month to 12,980 crore, according to the Association of Mutual Funds in India. Net inflows into equity mutual fund schemes, which had declined for 3 straight months to hit a 10-month low of 6,100 crore rupees in August, spiked 130% on a month-on-month basis to 14,100 crore rupees. Debt funds though did not find favor with investors as they saw outflows of 65,000 crore rupees, with liquid funds alone losing 60,000 crore rupees. The markets opened lower on Monday and then remained mostly flat until Thursday. But on Friday, investors turned bullish and both the benchmark indices, the Sensex and the Nifty, jumped as much as 2% in intraday trading. This helped the two indices to end the week almost at the same level as last week. The IT pack was a mixed bag of sorts. Infosys rode on an 11% jump in profits and was up more than 5% on Friday and 4% during the week. Wipro ended the week down 4.5% as the markets punished the counter after it reported a 9% drop in profits for the July to September quarter. HCL Technologies posted a 7% rise in its consolidated net profit for the September quarter at 3,489 crore. The Street rewarded this performance as the stock was up more than 5.6% as the week ended. The week's other best-performing stocks were Tech Mahindra, Grasim, Kotak Mahindra Bank, HDFC Bank and HDFC. Other counters that were in the green included Coal India, Sun Pharma, UPL, Tata Motors and Eicher Motors. The top losers were Adani Ports, Power Grid Corp, State Bank of India, ONGC and Indiabulls Housing. Some others that made their investors poorer were JSW Steel, Asian Paints, Gail India, Bajaj Auto and Yes Bank.